Okay, we're back for episode 151. Joe, how you doing?
I'm just fine, Tim. How are you?
Very well, thank you. Well, this week, more developments. I guess I think we'd agree to talk about the COVID-19 pandemic and as a disaster capitalism. But before we get into that, of course, there've been some interesting developments. Just recently, a couple days ago, in Wisconsin, the high court there declared the governor's stay-at-home order to be unconstitutional. And here we go. Wisconsin's governor says state is Wild West after stay-at-home order ruling. Wisconsin Governor Tom Evers said the state was the Wild West on a Wednesday night after the Wisconsin Supreme Court blocked an extension of a stay-at-home order. Wisconsin Governor... four judges have thrown our state into chaos. The four judges. It was a 4-3 ruling. Yeah. The Democratic state leader told MSNBC the judges had created chaos in Wisconsin by voting 4-3 against the extension of the state lockdown measures until May 26th. The Wisconsin Supreme Court judges ruled on Wednesday that his stay-at-home extension was unlawful, invalid, and unenforceable. The governor warned that there is nothing compelling anyone to do anything. I don't know what that means. In Wisconsin, I guess people just going out and kind of doing what they usually do, you know, whatever, doing, you know, in Wisconsin, as the novel coronavirus continued to spread across the U.S. It's a relentless march. It's apparently just killing people right and left. Speaking to MSNBC last night, Governor Evers said it was the four members of the court who made a decision that wasn't based on statute, precedent, or facts, or unfortunately. Oh, boy, that's the pot calling the kettle black. after touting the state's success in the following stay-at-home measures, the Democratic state leaders added, in one fell swoop, four judges who didn't really care about the statutes talked about have thrown our state into chaos. That is such a sad thing for the state of Wisconsin. The people of Wisconsin have worked so hard to have this chaotic situation at this point in time. So it's the people of Wisconsin that locked it down. I don't know what he means by that. It wasn't his order. Asked what would happen next in Wisconsin, Governor Evers said, the Wild West in the state has no restrictions now apply. Basically, how do people live without these restrictions, I guess? At this point in time, there's no orders, he said. There's nothing compelling anyone to do anything other than having chaos here. The governor added that people were not idiots in Wisconsin and would do everything they can to ensure their safety amid the coronavirus. Well, yeah, okay, then why have the lockdown order then?
Keep the businesses up and let people do, you know, if they're so smart, then they can just do what they're supposed to do to terror virus.
But when you have no requirements anymore, that's a problem, Evers added. We're just leaving it open. We're going to have more cases. We're going to have more deaths. It's a sad occasion for the state. I can't tell you how disappointed I am. He went on to claim that his team had no authority after the ruling and the court and could not take the immediate measures to curb the spread of the disease in Wisconsin. The Wisconsin State Health Authorities and Evers had sought to extend the stay-at-home orders first issued in March to the final week of May. But Republican lawmakers challenged the move by filing suit against Wisconsin Health Secretary Andrea Palm and other officials. Also, we had a Dr. Fauci video testimony before a U.S. Senate committee. And Dr. Fauci, a member of the White House's coronavirus task force, where he warned the Senate Tuesday that states and cities face serious consequences if they open up too quickly, urging states not to reopen until they know they have a capability to handle the inevitable uptick in cases once they relax stay-at-home orders. So notice that they keep moving the goalpost. At first, flattening the curve, and now it's about like winning the war on the virus, which is, I mean, let's assume it exists. That's simply not possible. It's not going to happen.
It's like winning the war against cancer.
Yeah, it's like
we have to wait for winning the war. I mean, we'll all be dead in the grave for 1,000 years.
You know? In a high-profile hearing where witnesses and many lawmakers joined via video conference, Fauci told a Senate committee on Tuesday it was a bridge too far for schools to expect a vaccine or a widely available treatment for COVID-19 by the time students return to campuses in the fall, though he expressed optimism a vaccine would be developed in the next year or two. Now, of course, from what I understand, children of school-age children have a virtually zero chance of dying from this thing, right?
Yes, that's correct. 1 in 100,000.
Okay. Okay. My concern is that if some areas, city, states, or what have you, jump over these various checkpoints and prematurely open up without having a capability of being able to respond effectively and efficiently, my concern is we will start to see little spikes that might turn into outbreaks, Fauci said in the committee before the Senate Health, Education, Labor, and Pensions Committee. There's a real risk that you will trigger an outbreak that you may not be able to control, which in fact, paradoxically, will set you back, not only leading to some suffering and death that could be avoided, but could even set you back on the road to try to get economic recovery, Fauci said. This, as of course, the lockdown is grinding the economy into dirt, creating 30 million people unemployed. And he's talking about suffering. What's the suffering brought about by mass unemployment and poverty? Are there any diseases that spread? What's the public health effect of mass poverty and homelessness and starvation? I mean, this is just ridiculous. And of course, then he has this hearing where everyone is either socially distancing or wearing masks. He's away from it. So the whole theater here where people are wearing masks, I think Lamar Alexander is the committee chairman. He was in his cabin with his dog teleconferencing for fear of the disease. And throughout this whole hearing, they talked about testing. We need to get testing done. So it's all theater. Then you get the partisan stuff where, you know, Patty Murray blames Trump for not acting fast enough. And then Lamar Alexander says we shouldn't be pointing fingers. The only skeptic among all the senators was Rand Paul, who voiced some skepticism about the measures, saying they could be worse. So, I mean, this committee hearing is just ridiculous. Again, this is all theater. They're all wearing masks. But by the way, as recently as March, Dr. Fauci said you shouldn't wear masks because they actually aggravate the situation. They're not good for your health. They actually facilitate the spread of disease. They don't protect you. Now, there's like a mask-wearing fetish where local governments are now imposing mandates to wear masks. Like out in L.A., Eric Garcetti said you have to wear a mask outside all the time, which is absolutely absurd. It's unhealthy to always wear a mask because you can actually inhibit your oxygen intake, which makes you ill. It's ridiculous. Not to mention the fact that these things that we use to protect us, they attract microbes and germs and stuff. If you're worried about such a thing, they don't do any good. It's all talked about testing and the need to get a vaccine for a nothing burger disease. But there's no talk about the collateral damage of these policies, which is again. Spikes in suicide, not to mention the ill health of being isolated, not going outside, not exercising your immune system. I mean, this is a thing where ordinarily in the spring, when you come out and you emerge, get more sun and you engage with people, you're building your immune system for later that year, okay? Because you're going to have exposure to all these things and you're exercising your immune system. Now, the very thing that they're talking about, a second wave with a mutated virus, all that is BS, or I can't. How do you confirm that? But their lockdown policies and their sheltering in place, stay-at-home orders, keeping people from working, is going to create the very scenario that they're predicting, because they're keeping people isolated. And people aren't getting their immune system exposed to the environment, not exercising their immune system during the summer and fall. And so late fall, people will come out and they'll be more vulnerable to diseases that are out there. The two doctors in California gave a very clear explanation of why that is. It's basic, immunology and it's basic good health. And these experts like Fauci and Birx and the CDC and all those people who say you should wear masks and wear gloves and stay away from people, social distancing, that is bad for your health. It's also bad for your psychology. This is absolutely absurd. And why are they still taken seriously? The media keeps promoting these people as if this is a responsible reaction. It's ridiculous.
Yeah, well, the media is part of the, the organization that keeps us enslaved. And I just wanted to comment on a couple of things you said. I mean, first of all, you were saying, well, how can we predict what this nightmarish second wave will be like that is now being used to keep us locked down? Yeah. And I mean, Tim, there's an easy solution to that. We can just have Neil Ferguson create a model. So that'll solve that problem. We'll know exactly how. We'll probably lose about 120% of the population. And then the other thing I wanted to mention was Fauci, when he was talking about, you don't want to slow down your economic recovery by opening too soon. I mean, this really
what?
is pretty funny because we've got like, well, 30 million new unemployed, but basically we're looking at a country with maybe 40, 45 actual unemployed, 45 million unemployed, and heading straight down. I mean, remember there's some of the restaurants and stuff that have opened up in like Georgia and Texas. I mean, you can see that there isn't enough financial power at the moment to sustain these businesses, and they're going to be dropping like flies. And believe me, when you do reopen, I think you're going to find that you lost like 20% of the businesses, but you lose another half of the businesses that tried to open within 2 or 3 months. So that is our current situation, which is basically like, say, losing a nuclear war.
Well, how do you have an economic recovery without
Right.
economic activity?
Yeah, well, this is
I
the
guess
thing.
you, you I mean, I guess you write checks, you write
Yeah,
bailout
well,
checks.
you do. You economic activity has now become government largesse, with invented money. That is our economic activity. But the point is that Fauci's statement is demonstrably basically insane. I mean, would be one way of character. I mean, it's just completely nuts, right? There, you can't be doing worse than we are. We are decelerating the economy and accelerating the catastrophe at flank speed. You see what I mean? It is just as fast as we can fall apart as a nation. So the idea that we could make it worse by something that might happen in a reopening, I mean, you would have to have Fauci present some data, perhaps, so we could actually see what his numbers are actually going to look like. I mean, how many, unemployed would this second wave, this spike? I mean, in other words, if he attempted to, use analysis and facts to present to the public, I mean, it would just his position would completely collapse in a few seconds, right? I mean, he doesn't have anything. So all he has is this concept of fear. And my point is Fauci's statement is actually useful because it shows people that we are in the grips of a secret society who is in ha has the intention of destroying us. I mean, this is a real problem because when your government is in the hands of psychopaths who are organized so well and use clever, mind control techniques like Fauci, how do you organize the public against it, So
Well,
the
even the whole theater of the committee where everyone is socially distanced or doing by video and or they're wearing scarves, Nancy Pelosi's fancy silk scarf mask, or they're so they're or Mitch McConnell walking around with his mask on. So that theater validates Fauci's position.
Exactly. In other words, so the whole thing is just mind control. So you're looking at politicians who are either thought puppets or in the guild, and in any case, they're enforcing this image, which is basically giving people this virtue signal that we should be wearing masks, even though this is not going to help anything, and actually will make, as you pointed out, will make people weaker. And so, of course, when they get sick, when you isolate people in their apartments, when they don't really have access to healthy food, when they're depressed because they don't have a job, I mean, all of these, everything is moving toward ill health. And of course, when they get sick, they will be declared to have COVID and put on an intubator, and then their lungs will be blown up. So they'll be in, and then they will come back and they go, well, we didn't social distance enough, and there's a little spike here, so we have to close everything down again. So we're in a death spiral, and I you don't who knows how far the intention is at this point. I mean, like when this happened way back in March, I was mentioning that I was afraid this was going to be like a Holodomor, where eventually they would try to just starve everyone out and go for the Georgia Guidestones number of 500 million people. And I really haven't seen anything yet to change my mind. I mean, I keep hoping that the reopenings and the sheriffs who take stands against you know, these small areas of resistance that they will spread, and then there can be, you know, some clear sign that we're not all going to be dead in about 12 months or 24 months. But, you know, this week, the thing that did trouble me with Trump saying that he basically was going to use the army to bring out the vaccinations when it was ready. Now, this doesn't make a lot of sense. I mean, if you're talking about transporting vaccines, right? I mean, you certainly wouldn't want, GIs administering, hypodermic needles to children, right? I mean, so the idea that the army now is being associated with the rollout of the vaccination is pretty troubling. And in fact, it made me think about, really, what would be the, high end of resistance that the civilian can engage in just to defend themselves? And as you know, like last week, I think we talked about the case in Ventura where the doctor, had made a clear statement that they were going to go into houses and take out family members and, sequester them. And then he walked back when there was kind of a semi-violent response to this. But they are making these probes, it seems like. The state of Washington also, the governor also talked about, sequestering people through contact tracing, it's so draconian what they're seemingly talking about. What they're talking about is if you have your phone with you and you are determined by the computer to have been close to someone who had COVID, right? Say you go out and someone walks by you. Well, now you're marked, and now they can come and do a test on you, or perhaps even just use the computer proximity and then sequester you.
This is for a disease which 98 to 99% people under the age of 65 are asymptomatic or mild response.
Yeah, exactly. Symptoms. So it's clearly, this is just either high-level slave training or population reduction or both,
Well, these are clearly illegal. I mean, this is obviously illegal search and seizure.
I mean, it's just breached at this point. Yeah. It's breached. The government's illegitimate. So anyway, I was thinking that what would real citizen resistance look like? And my idea is that people should declare basically an oath, maybe on Facebook or some other platform. They should just say, I will not allow anyone to mandatory vaccinate me, and I will defend anyone who wishes me to do so who wants to resist mandatory vaccination, something like that. Better grammar than that statement, but some short oath. And then this should be collected so we have, like a contact tracing for heroes program where, looking at the activity on the websites, there seems to be now the alt media is in – basically seems to be roaring at this point because so many people are waking up. They're seeing that this is, they listen to Fauci and they go, this is nonsense. They can see it. And they're starting to be afraid of the government, which means they're also afraid of the media. Mm-hmm. They don't trust it. And so when you look at these, Bill Gates makes a statement or, whoever, and if they have a comment section, it's, 100 to 1. And the 100 who are in opposition are really aggressive. Now, is that going to translate into behavior? I don't know. But what we should be trying to do is organize all of that energy so that we have contact tracing for heroes, so that people who are prepared to defend themselves and their neighbors are identified. So, and then of course, then perhaps some clever internet person can organize this so that if you're in a situation where, here comes, Dr. Bill Gates with the syringe, you can actually make an appeal to the people in your area to help you defend yourself. I think that would be something that would be kind of the, a step toward citizen capacity to resist. And then the other thing is, we should really try to organize all of the groups that have the capacity to resist. church groups, like the 3,000 ministers that are going to be opening up in defiance of Newsom here in a week, I'm trying to reach them to see if they would help take a stand against mandatory vaccination and against mandatory kidnapping by the government of children. I mean, this doesn't seem to be too much to ask of Christian ministers to take a stand against that. But if they do, then to see if we can plug that group into the Contact Tracing for Heroes organization. And then also, I mean, I have connections, you know, friends like in Latino and African-American communities in the inner city. And I'm going to ask them to say, look, you know, do you guys have anybody who can really, you know, defend? You know, it seems to me you've got a lot of experience dealing with police. Maybe, you know, there are people there that like are actually basically feeling that they don't want to have, you know, the government come in and do mandatory vaccination of them and their children. These groups should be put in contact with, say, the Christian ministers if they're going to, you know, be available. And then also groups that are, you know, kind of who make declarations of being, you know, kind of militia, you know, where they're there for the Constitution. I mean, these groups are, you know, like they get, you know, characterized as white male racist supremacists, you know. But there are a lot of them. I don't know to what extent they are actually capable of organization. But my point is that, you know, Trump said he was going to use the army, and he was talking by the end of the year, where you're looking at maybe if they get the beast vaccine, to use an expression, ready by January, December, we have just between now and then to be able to organize some resistance. Because I think if the citizens were at the high end, I mean, think of a bell curve of like the left-hand side is just accept it, you know, we won't complain. And the right-hand side is half of the people who come to administer illegal mandatory vaccines face basically martial response. If you look at that spectrum, I think the far end would probably slow things down quite a bit.
Yeah.
I mean, because you couldn't really get volunteers. If there's actually organized, you know, people saying, look, you know, we regard this activity as unconstitutional, the government is illegitimate, we are armed and we're going to defend ourselves and our neighbors. Okay, you want to come on? Come on. But we're prepared to die.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I think if that mindset was common, and you know, it's like last week you had talked about that experiment where it doesn't take a large, you know, or a majority, because most people can see the truth, I think, at this point. Maybe they're not, you know, in the alt media world at this point, but I think a lot of people, I think the majority of people, can see that there's something wrong with the government at this point, right? And so if you had a few determined people, you know, particularly that if they were a broad swath, you know, of our United States citizens, and they were, you know, saying, look, we're going to defend ourselves, I think you might get in that situation that you described last week, where just a small fraction who stands up for what is real will get those who have been conditioned into accepting things that are obviously fake, that they would say, you know, they, as you said, their morale would go up, and they would go, you know, I see it. I see the truth. No, I'm sorry, I'm not taking the beast vaccine. No, you can't take my daughter for 2 weeks. No, I'm not going to let you in the house. You know, now if they get there and then they're willing to defend themselves, then, you know, we actually are, making, you know, we are trying then to create the defense of the inalienable rights. You know, we have the inalienable right with that here in the United States. And they, unfortunately, they're only real if the citizens demand that they be respected. And so we have an illegitimate government at this point. We need to basically take the responsibility of citizenship and defend the inalienable rights.
Yeah, I mean, I think at some point they're going to mandate blindfolds to keep people to see what's really going on. You know, that'd be the next step, you know. And half the population will wear it because they're told to wear it, even when they're driving.
and reading.
And Fauci will say, well, we can't, you know, we have to have these things because we have to, we can't risk loss of life, even though, well, what about the, you know, the, what about the fact that people can't see that they'll crash and die? But that's like when no one pressured or asked Fauci about, you know, was it Oxfam who said that just overnight 250 million people were at risk of starvation because of the worldwide economic shutdown, and that's just going to get worse, and as many as a billion people are going to face this problem by the end of the year. And so, and what's telling was I don't think he was asked that question when he's talking.
No, and it's all scripted because the obvious question is, it's so simple.
It is.
It's the elephant in the room. And you say, Fauci, it looks to us like the effects of the lockdown are 10 times worse than the virus. Show us it isn't the case.
Yes.
Give us some analysis showing that the effects of the lockdown are 10 times more than whatever the virus is going to be. If they don't even address the question, which is just the elephant in the room, you're dealing with an operation.
You ask them, would you support these policies if you were facing being kicked out of your home, or you couldn't you couldn't feed yourself or your children? Would you support these policies right now? He hasn't missed a paycheck, nor has he missed a meal. You know.
No. And neither has Bill Gates. I saw an interview with Gates. I mean, you know, first of all, he doesn't look very healthy to me. I think he may have had too many vaccinations. I mean, if you notice, he just looks horrible.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, maybe there's a stress that is associated with being evil. But he said that, you know, he was asked about, you know, well, how long is this going to go on? And he said, well, the final solution.
Yes. Is the virus. I mean, is the vaccine. Yeah.
Said that the final solution to return to normalcy has got to be the vaccination, which is a miracle, you know. So, you know, these thoughts are in his mind, and they come out from time to time. That's just.
Well, here's the thing with a lot of the things you're talking about, whether it's the vaccines or some of the other measures, you know, the contact tracing, the surveillance, sort of the technocratic control grid that they're implementing or unleashing under the guise of a public health measure, is that they're going to make it so it's not so much the government doing it, it's going to be corporations doing it. And already right now, corporations are scrambling to redesign the workplace, you know, the new normal workplace where people will come in, you have to follow arrows, walk a certain direction, you can't retrace your steps, you got to follow around, you can't backstep anywhere, you can't turn around, you have to you have to take a temperature, someone will take your temperature when you go in, the middle of the day, when you leave, you have to have your cell phone with you all the time, and with hourly reports of your biometrics and these things. And there's going to be a whole industry developed, compliance industry, like there is for civil rights laws or American Disability Act laws. It's all become a part of corporate America, and it'll filter down into smaller and smaller companies. And this will become the normal workplace, will become HR policy. And they'll say, well, if you don't like it, you don't have to work here. So it's, again, compliance, non-compliance will mean starvation, lack of employment in the system. And, of course, the economic lockdown helps because the economic lockdown destroys the small, mid-sized, locally owned businesses that may not be on board with this stuff. And so as you concentrate the economy in their smaller and smaller hands who control it, as you corporatize it more, people will have to comply with it in order to get employment. And this is where, again, where civil disobedience or just consciousness helps, because ultimately, people will say, no, we're not going to work for you then. We're not going to do this. Sorry, we're not going to do this. This is ridiculous. Again, all this is based on a phantom pandemic, which they have not demonstrated actually exists. In fact, if you just look at the raw numbers, you have no increase or spike in overall mortality. And so if you did have an incident or a unique disease out there, a unique, you'd see a spike in these things. And if anything, they've been caught cooking the books, issuing tens of thousands of false death certificates in the United States. They admitted doing this. In other circumstances, this would be considered fraud. is it is fraud because you're getting funding based on these things, because you're getting federal relief funds, which actually is exasperating because it's actually put a lot of people on ventilators when they shouldn't have been, like in New York. Remember Governor Cuomo talking about how much he needs ventilators? I need the ventilators. I need the ventilators. And now there's no talk of it anymore. Well, it turns out these ventilators might have killed a lot of people because intubation is a very sensitive process. If you do it incorrectly, if you give it to someone who doesn't need it, you can kill them. Apparently they have. No one's talking about that anymore in New York City. You know,
Tim, I talked to a respiratory therapist, and she said, I asked her about intubation. I said, well, you know, what does it actually do? And like, you know, what's the success rate? And she said, there is zero success. She said, once you're on it, it's just a way to extend life until
it's an expression,
the loved ones can get there, you know, and be in the room because it's an expression.
Remember, here's the term where he's on a ventilator.
Yeah, because the thing is that if you're like, remember the COVID guys who are really sick, or supposedly, are all old codgers, right? And they have underlying health issues. Well, to intubate, you have to put them under very strong anesthesia because you can't like stick a tube down someone's throat when they're conscious, right? Mm-hmm. Well, the old people, they can't be on general anesthesia for like 12 hours. I mean, their brains get fried anyway. So the whole idea that this was medical is just preposterous. It was just a way to get the body count up, you know.
And if you look at this whole thing with this idea of contract tracing, apparently there is a bill, H.R. 666, I think.
Well, 6666. Not the mark of the beast, but the mark of the beast plus 1-6. Yeah.
And it gives $1 billion for the Department of Health and Human Services, I guess, head of the Department of Health and Human Services, to give out grants. Now you're going to have like private corporations doing this. They're going to hire an army of contract tracers or coronavirus detectives. New York is doing this. New Jersey's done this. California has done this. Gavin Newsom envisions an army of 20,000 going around.
We talk about this. This is just preposterous. Yeah. Look, if you walk down the street, I just went down the beach, right, Santa Barbara. And because a lot of the LA beaches are locked down, everyone's up here.
Yeah.
It's a hot day. There was like, and I'm not exaggerating, in a 2 mile walk, there was 5,000 people, right? So I don't social distance. I'm just wandering around with my wife. We're taking our walk, and I like to bump fists with people because I like the social contact. Yeah. I think it's a good idea, and I'm friendly. I like all kinds of people, and so I'm walking down. Okay. So say I touched or was in a contact tracing zone with like 500 people.
Uh-huh.
Okay, now wait a second. If I am infected, those 500 people will all be in the red zone of we have to go out and sequester them, plus all the people that they touched. And right now, and like if they, by the time these people get there in 2 days, you're talking about half of the state's population. You see what I mean? It spreads so quickly. If there is any kind of social groups whatsoever, that there isn't any value to this whatsoever.
Well, what they're missing is that touching, that casual touching that we all engage in when we go into a crowd, shake hands, talk to somebody. Your immune system is engaging the environment, and that is good. That is a positive good. So when something bad comes along, you can deal with it.
Necessary. Yep.
And this is so obvious. And someone asked Fauci this question. I was like, wait a second, you're supposed to be the head of infectious diseases and you're not considering this? Because, like you said, this is an operation. These are just obvious questions that they're not being asked. I mean, it's a common understanding. It's like you want kids going out, playing in the sun, getting dirty. These are things that were usually once understood as healthy. Now I go outside and I see a mother walking with her three kids and they have like all masks on. What's that? What is that doing psychologically that to those children? When I see that, they're subjecting their kids to these things.
Fauci is to like, infectious disease what Neil Ferguson is to statistical models. I mean, he is just 100% loser and a fraud. And I guess this is, like you say, he fails upward, but this is because he's, a reliable guild member. And now he's even an economist where he's talking about what will happen economically in the future, you know, if you don't follow my regimen.
Well, I mean, he's saying if you don't go out and engage in economic activity, the economy will recover. I mean, it's like, no. You're saying that everything should be shut. How do you have a recovery? Because their idea of recovery is like the Congress just passed a $3 trillion relief bill. And so basically, yeah. Government paper money, money created out of thin air, debt is going to. But the problem is, at the end of the day, it's not about giving people free money. It's about being able to go out and engage in productive activity. I mean, that's what an economy is. They think these people think there's an economy out there. It just rains goods and services, and the grocery store, just food, just shows up there, and you know the infrastructure and the vehicles are maintained and these things. This requires people going out and engaging, touching other people, engaging, getting all types of germs on them in the process. And if you don't engage in activity, you're not going to have an economy. And I mean, it's just, they think they can just pass a relief bill, handing out free government money to people as if that's going to solve the problem. It's not. It's going to make it worse, because this gets into the ultimate plan, I think, is all this debt is in the process of shutting down the economy, real economic activity, and just exploding government debt. They're destroying the currency.
Right. And that's, in my opinion, is one of the goals, because by the destruction of the currency, they also evaporate their. So what I think the end game will be, when you'll see the dollar will basically disappear, it simply will stop functioning. And then replacement, which will be electronic transfers, and that you can then go to Costco and Walmart and purchase Coca-Cola and corn chips.
Yeah, these are so.
I mean,
the thing about my money is cash is if it's a currency, then once you have it, you can barter with it. Meaning that's power. If it has purchasing power, sure. You use the term purchasing power. But if you hold that currency, and if you have a currency system, even though they debase it continually, if they're forced to use that currency in transactions, buying oil, international trade, and these things, the system that they've set up, they have to maintain some value to it. And in the meantime, in order for the economy to function, people are going to have currency to engage in commerce. That's a little bit of freedom. But if you create a social credit system where you have credits and not currency, then you have no freedom, because those credits can be taken away without affecting the overall, you know, system of distribution of goods and services. Because it creates a control system, which is what this slow imposition, or not, now they're picked up now, but it's basically the China model being imposed to deal with the crisis. But all this contract tracing, this technocratic control stuff, this idea of getting people addicted to universal basic income, because it turns out that a lot of federal funding and a lot of these states are giving out unemployment of 130% of what you were getting paid. Think about that.
I actually talked to someone. And
how do you get someone back to work if they're being paid more than not to work? And again,
they'll go back to work. I mean, they want to go back to work, believe me, because everyone is just sick of the situation. But I talked to someone who's getting $1,000 a week, and his income had only been around $800 a week.
Yeah.
So he was, as far as he was concerned, this was just a day at the beach. You know, he wasn't suffering. But when you when you transition to the whole economy is now using the SNAP card,
yes,
which is, you know, the welfare system. I mean, you know, you have like 33 million new unemployed, which adds to the others. So 50 million unemployed, 45 million unemployed. I mean, that's probably half of the workforce. They are basically now all, you know, slaves to a socialist system. And the money that is supporting them is not based in real, you know, economic activity. It's just being created. And so the question is like, how much debt can the U.S. create out of thin air before the currency stops? And I think that would be one of the very end points of all this. You know, we get into vulture capitalism, because I think that when the transition comes, what you'll see is that all of the banks are simply froze up. I mean, mm-hmm. they don't, all your bank accounts have nothing in them. The government will say, oh, don't worry, we'll bail you out of everything. But now you're going to need, you know, to replace the savings, you'll need another 10 trillion, and that's when the dollar will just stop. And so the government then will be there with a plan, and that will be, well, we're going to have this new largesse system, which will, you know, keep you alive. However, it is, you know, it does require that your vaccines are current. And I was sent a document, and I think it was for the state of, may have been California, but I think it may have also been, well, I forget. But the document was, it was for individuals who are on state subsistence. And the document said that, you know, you're going to be getting this revenue stream. However, we do require that your vaccination schedule be current. So this was actually in the language of the document. I think that that's a precursor. I think that once they, when they get rid of the dollar, the group that had refused mandatory vaccination will now be given a choice of, well, you know, your social credit score is low, so you can't, you're not going to get any corn chips this week.
Yeah, and that's the China model.
The China model, yeah, exactly. So that, and that's what I think awaits us. So I've been telling people that, you know, we immediately need to increase homeschooling by 10,000 times. I hope that the homeschooling.
I think they inadvertently, they kind of did that already, didn't
Yeah, it's kind of oddly, you know. But we
they?
also have to do home economy because we basically have to like start thinking about, well, you know, what are we going to do to keep ourselves alive in this new world? Because like you say, a lot of people won't, you know, want to take the beast vaccine to go into, you know, like some kind of clerical position and, you know, where they have their eyes tested, their, you know, and they have to keep their vaccines current every week. You know, I mean, it doesn't look like a very fun environment. So how are you going to like make a living? Well, you know, it's going to be tough, but I think home economy systems where, you know, we can kind of think about, well, who can do what and organize ourselves a little bit. Oddly enough, here where I live, people are actually thinking about that.
Yeah, I mean, obviously that you want to get in a system where you have more autonomy,
Yeah, and
yeah.
you're doing business with people that you know and trust,
And
rather.
that currency circulates locally. Yeah.
Yeah,
Yeah.
exactly, and it recirculates. So the thing is that's kind of the, you know, and of course, barter. Because I think that is also going to be something that'll become very popular as the currency collapses. So we need to, you know, be looking at these options and trying to be ahead of the curve, to use an expression here, Tim. So,
Well, I was listening to it was a good about almost a 2 hour conversation between Catherine Austin Fitz and John Rappaport about he's had a it's like a 5-part series on the false pandemic that the her at Sillery.com she has posted you can get without paying, and they were talking about this, and she made a very interesting point about what was going on with the economy, and you know in the fall you had the repo market having trouble with the interbank lending, and then you have Event 201 in October, and then she said at this time there are several moves against the U.S. dollar by the BRIC nations. This was Putin gave some talks about how the dollar was going to collapse, and all of a sudden you have this report of a pandemic in China, which then spreads to the West, and this was going into 2020. The trade deficit with China between the U.S. and China had peaked. And one thing we see with this lockdown, with the economic shutdown and the pandemic, is there's been a sharp, I think it's the trade deficit between China and the U.S. has been cut drastically. At the same time, despite all the deficit spending, borrowing that the government has done in response to the crisis, the dollar is stronger relative to other currencies than ever because you've had a retreat into treasuries because of the problems in Europe and in Asia. And so what she said, what Catherine Austin Fitz said, this is an attempt to reshore the dollar, despite the fact that they're rapidly inflating and debt's going up, without massive inflation, because the austerity keeps the inflation down. That's what the lockdown is all about. High unemployment and the shortages that we're experiencing, this is all austerity that they've been talking. We've heard talk about, you know, impose some sort of austerity. Well, here's the austerity under the guise of a crisis, of a pandemic, economic shutdown to deal with the crisis. No, the lockdown is the austerity they're imposing. Why they play games with the dollar? to reassure it in a transition to getting rid of all currency, which is the social credit system. Because the system itself can't be sold on its own. It has to be a crisis. And we're saying, well, you can emerge from your house arrest if you follow this stage. That's why we have these multi-stage processes where stage one is you can peek out your window of the, you know, stage two is you can look at a store. Stage three, you can do curbside pickup. Stage four is you can go in, but you can't use the bathroom. These are ridiculous rules about recovery. These things, really, for economy to recover from this, you got almost have to remove all the restrictions. You got to free it up, kind of like they did in West Germany in 1947 or 48. But this is all about introducing, because now our liberty that which once took for granted to go to the store, go on vacation if we have the money, these things won't be possible in the social credit system because it'll be more than what our account allows for. So this what they've said and done is they've suddenly destroyed the middle class. Now all of a sudden the rich people don't have to rub elbows with the middle class when they travel anymore. Everyone's been more or less been their lifestyle or their living standards have been rapidly decreased, under the guise of this, but at the same time, to reemerge from this thing, you got to accept all these technocratic controls. You know, like I said, contract tracing at work, biometric monitoring 24/7. Pretty soon it's going to be driverless cars and these things. Like the document that I mentioned a few weeks ago, and this agenda is being rolled out under the guise of the crisis. And to me, it's so obvious. I mean, you have all these governors are all on, whether it's Newsom, whether it's Cuomo in New York or Inslaw in Washington, or all these governors or Pennsylvania, Governor Wolf, who's grinding their economy in the ground, or the Whitless or Whitmore out in Michigan, who's, digging in her heels, trying to keep the economy shut down. Apparently there's some court cases in Pennsylvania and Michigan. We'll see how that plays out. One thing I also find interesting is that none of these people live by their own rules. It was Governor Pritzker, Pritzker, whose wife went down to Florida during the lockdown, and someone asked him about it. He actually said, I don't want to talk about my family. We don't talk about family and politics. But then you have a situation both in Pennsylvania and Illinois where you have two Jewish governors that are regulating or imposing all types of constraints or restraints on the Catholic Church holding masses. I mean, does that look kind of funny to you? Under the guise, you only have 10 people in a church at a time, these things. And, and some of the churches are complying with this, where they're saying we can reopen, but we have to practice social distancing in the church. Well, that's ridiculous. That can't be maintained anyway. And it's ridiculous anyway, because, again, this is an example. Once you agree to these terms, you're lending credibility to the PSYOP.
And also, it's an inalienable right. We have the right to both to peaceful assembly and to freedom of religion. So their capacity to create laws stops at the church door. So they cannot come inside the church and make any kind. They can give suggestions, and if people are afraid, they can. I'm sure it would be very simple to arrange one side with social distancing and one side. You could accommodate this very simply.
This is an old Western concept. There was a famous painting of the Emperor Theodosius trying to emperor a cathedral in Italy, and the bishop I think it's in Milan, and there's a painting where he's barring and putting his hand up to him, and the emperor relents, and this was the establishment of church authority, and this is the thing. It used to be a place where you simply have no authority, but in the case of the Catholic Churches, the bishops just collapse. They didn't put up any resistance.
Yeah, it was. I was actually hoping that they might be, a leader in this. But they just absolutely collapsed. I was delighted that so many Christian ministers somehow organized themselves into this revolt here in California. We'll see how it all works out. But that's one of the groups that I'm going to try to create this network with. So in my suggestion box, I said we need people who are prepared to defend need to identify themselves, and some clever internet person has to organize this into some kind of contact tracing for Hero Network. I mean, I wouldn't have a clue as to how to do it, but I'm sure it's, we can somehow get this done.
I mean, there are some encouraging signs. Remember that whole thing down in Texas with the hairdresser, opening her salon, then going to jail over it, then the uproar, and then the governor out there, Abbott, ended up backing her up, and so did the attorney general. And she raised like $500,000 in a GoFundMe thing. But you had a situation there where she was being lectured by this judge who receives $150,000 a year salary, paid by people like her, calling her selfish for trying to keep her employees employed so they can feed her family.
The court system is illegitimate. I mean, they are just people who wear robes and have thugs with guns at their side. They're just totally illegitimate. This is not the rule of law, because it starts with the Constitution. Laws are underneath the Constitution. Mm-hmm. You know, she has the right to, if she's not breaking an actual coherent law, she has the right to freedom. And the idea that this judge would lecture her is just disgusting.
Well,
and
so, order for laws to be respected, they have to be respectful.
Well, they have to be under the Constitution. Yeah. I mean, that's the social contract. And when you're not, then it's just the end. That's the end of the social contract. And then that's just a street fight. But the other thing I was going to say, because I said, contact tracing for heroes, make an identification, and then try to organize groups, try to put groups into one another so that groups will come forward. And it's important that it isn't just militia. It would be great if you could have the Christian ministers, LA gangbanger groups, and white militia groups all come forward and say, we're just going to defend the people that are in our communities who ask us to. I mean, that would just be like the far end of the, of the possibilities that the citizen has for defense. And then the other thing is start getting your radical freedom-oriented politician candidates ready now. Start now. I think, and you can see how these small little things like sheriff,
yes, the sheriff departments,
you can see what a huge difference it makes. Now, sheriff is a local election. Every single sheriff should be reviewed. And if a sheriff has decided not to defend the Constitution, we've got to get somebody else in there. And because the sheriffs are so local, the big grinded up media campaigns like that always controls governor and obviously presidents, senators, all of that. But sheriffs are different. So that would be where I would focus.
That's when George Soros would start giving money to sheriff candidates.
Probably would, but you see, that could be identified, and then that would then be brought to the citizens. And I think on local levels, this is where some real resistance could be created. Get someone who will run on the platform of protecting the Constitution, that he will aggressively defend the Constitution, that the inalienable rights are the first thing that which is incidentally the first thing that the oath in least in California that the sheriff swears to is to defend the Constitution, and as a governor, of course, which I guess Newsom somehow has forgotten. But the thing is that you just identify people who will really defend the Constitution, because if you have a sheriff who is aggressive and who says, nope, you can't come in here and like mandatory vaccinate. You see, that goes to the concept you brought up last week. It doesn't take a huge majority to wake people up. If the sheriff said, no, I'm sorry, I'm just not letting you come in. You can't come into my county. I mean, that would create a backbone in the citizens.
It's an example of
the sheriff.
Yeah.
And then you'd have, tens of thousands of people suddenly in the streets defending the sheriff and defending their community. I'm telling you, folks, this is what it's come to. This is what it has come to. So if you have a sheriff that is coming up for an election, you have to start now. This is life and death. You need to absolutely just cannot sit back and let history unfold. It will unfold right on top of you and destroy you and your family. You have to act. The thing you have to do now is first get good sheriffs in place. That's number one. And then the second is contact tracing for heroes. You know, they're going to try to contact trace us for, to sequester us. we have to find some way to antidote that. And that's where we find people who are willing to say, look, I'm going to defend myself, my family, and the people in my community who want and ask to be defended. You get that going. At the same time, you have a real sheriff. I mean, it's going to be a tough little community. It won't be that easy for the New World Order to come in with the beast vaccine and all of the, you know, all of the ways that they destroy us. And now, if you have that situation, if you actually have like a county with a real sheriff and a real basically citizen militia, now you can start to work on the economic side as well. Mm-hmm. And you can tell these guys just to piss off. We're going to make our own economy here. We're going to have our Virginia dollar with Tim Kelly on the bill. And those will be collector's items. And so that's what we need to do, you know? So it has come to this. I've had serious conversations with people, you know, about, okay, well, you know, it's easy for me to be brave because I'm old and don't have a future, but we all need courage at this point. And we need to kind of get outside of the box we've been placed in, the intimidation, the inability to think of anything, you know, being able to get anything done, you know, no defense of neighbors, you know, watch the vaccine squads come up and just pin them to the ground and inject them. I mean, you know, we have to start thinking a little differently, you know, at this point.
Well, I mean, it was life isn't about just living. I mean, it's like staying alive. It's about, you know, engaging in life, being productive, doing something meaningful in these things. And with that is also the willingness to take risks, which we all kind of just assume we do when you grow old. It used to be considered sort of a psychological, you know, a disorder to be so fearful of risk that you wouldn't leave your house, or agoraphobia, right? Now they've made that into a requirement, where just because there might be some risk out there. If you just look at the numbers, the statistical chances of someone under the age of 65 who's healthy of even getting seriously ill from this stuff, I mean, is far less than you getting involved in a traffic altercation or having an accident. I mean, but nevertheless, they've used this to lock down the economy. We know this is why. This is because this is part of this economic reset that they're trying to do, and to impose a technocratic slave state. You know, so but that's not inevitable. I mean, to me, they've done humanity a great favor by this great leap forward that they've attempted, because otherwise there was no way to get people's attention in these things.
Exactly.
And now
we have their attention.
Yes.
And now the alt media, I mean, like, I don't know if you saw, there was an article in the New Yorker, but this, and it was a clear propaganda piece. In other words, it was written by, you know, probably a staff of psychologists, you know, who organized this thing. And it was all about their worry that there would be an effective vaccine and half of America would refuse to take it because they had been seduced by the delusions of the alt media. It was New York Times ran it. And you could see how clever it was, you know, about it used all this kind of like seductive language to get the reader to see the people who were bringing the concern about vaccinations as conspiracy theorists, as militia groups, as, you know, just every aspect of like someone who would be irrational and you would hate, and that the people who are bringing the vaccinations forward were literally like archangels, you know, that were like bringing us miracles from God. And so it was just a one-way traffic propaganda piece. But when I saw it, I thought, aha, this is useful, because you know, this guy is saying they're worried about the alt media's influence. Well, let me tell you something, Tim. You think the alt media is powerful and worrisome today to the New York Times and this group? Give it 3 months. Mm-hmm. Give it 3 months. You're going to see the alt media double, because all of the people that were even remotely considering the rationale behind some of the conspiracy theories are going to see all of the theories come into reality very, very quickly. Mm-hmm. And they will realize at that point that they cannot turn to CNN and Fox News and Fauci and all of the talking point politicians for information. And when they start to en masse move into like trying to find alternative information, you're going to see the alt media explode. And that's why I'm actually, like you say, this was, I don't know, you know, like they talk about the guild, as I call them, the secret society, you know, the group that we have done our best to identify, you know, over these last, you know, 151 episodes. But I think they overplayed their hand. I think this was absolutely, and they could have done this incrementally and probably not had the explosion, but the disruption of people's lives and the ham-handed kind of, you know, ending of freedom, ending of the economy, and then all of these slave training attributes at the same time, it has forced anyone who is clear-minded to consider the rationale that has driven the alt media since 9/11, that the government is a secret society, that there's something wrong, something hidden, something evil inside government and inside the media, and that now when you have that perspective, the propaganda stops working. And that's why, this is my point, sorry to be long-winded, but my point is the propaganda is going to stop working here. It's going to stop working because there is skepticism now, and that's all it takes. You know, you cannot, if you have even any kind of clear-minded skepticism, the government rationale for 9/11 just seems ludicrous. Well, the same thing is going to happen here, except much more quickly, because it is so ham-handed, it's so really just obvious and stupid that anyone who has a skepticism, and I think hunger and losing your job, having your family walk down, all of these things, you know, kind of move a person's mind, you know, toward a different perspective than they've been like conditioned into, that those things will open up the door of like an open mind. And now at that point, the place to turn will be the alt media. Now I know there's going to be lots of shills, et cetera, et cetera. It's going to be a mess, but here we have a chance. You know, we aren't going to just there's so much strength in the alt media now. There's so many thousands of bloggers, you know, people trying to get information out. And there's so many people that are good at vetting, you know, who know the shills and the Lifetime actors. And so, man, we got a shot here. So
there's nothing more dangerous is than a man who has nothing to lose.
Yeah.
And so what they've done is they've cornered people into a situation where they're looking at it and they're looking at the numbers as time each day goes by. Says, I got nothing to lose. This is ridiculous. And, you know, so they've taken away my business. I've lost my employment. These things. What do I have to lose now? And so I got to fight back, whatever means necessary, whatever means available, and these things. And so they've created a very desperate situation in the eyes of millions of people who are now forced to reevaluate their idea of reality now. And they've been forced to. The wolf is at the door now. What do you do? It is an opportunity for people to wake up to the reality of the system. It's kind of, you know, what's that quote by Frank Zappa where, you know, he was what a creep in many ways, but he said something that's very interesting. He said that the illusion of freedom will only be maintained as long as it's profitable. The moment it becomes no longer profitable, they'll remove the, you know, the stage will be cleared and you'll see the brick wall, and we're seeing the brick wall now. And, this is the reality now. And if you're going to, but it's funny because we, if you live in a society or in a country that supposedly is rule of law, where we have civil liberties, we're free to pursue our dreams, and we're free to be be employed and take care of ourselves and these things. Now, to a certain extent, that window dressing, that illusion is real. It's out there. People are doing these things. It's just for the meantime, it's being tolerated. And if you do have a system which is largely controlled but maintains the illusion of rule of law, free elections, officials, these things, people within that system are going to believe that system works. Are going to believe that's how the system is supposed to work, right? So when you do lower the boom, or when you do impose the tyranny, they're going to react a certain way and go, what's going on? What are you trying to do? No, this isn't right. And that's what we're seeing now is we're at a meta level, but at the local level, various governors or a handful of governors or a handful of congressmen or state legislatures or city councilors or sheriffs and these things, they're saying, hey, wait a second, this is not the way it's supposed to be. So now we're forced to say, to engage those people on those terms. then, you know, almost like the reaction is, wait a second, you didn't get the message here. All this is an illusion. It's not this, you know, there is no rule of law, but people are acting as if there is rule of law, which is enough to motivate them to fight the fight against the tyranny. And that's what they're facing now. If you're going to control a system with sort of a faux rule of law, faux freedom, there's a certain extent that freedom is going to exist, and people are going to believe that they do have civil liberties, that they do have constitutions that are enforceable, and they got to deal. That's what they're dealing with now. It's almost like, to them, they might consider it like a mop-up operation now. But I do think, again, what happens is because of growing consciousness, there's just too many people who are going to be aware of this. This either they're gonna have to take it back, walk it back a few steps, or the whole thing's gonna collapse. And right now, I think what's happened with a lot of these politicians is they've pretty much with the whole scamdemic or the whole pandemic narrative is they can't walk that back because they've shut down the economy for better part of 2 months and caused a lot of misery. They can't admit and go, oh, sorry, it wasn't necessary. So they almost got to double down. And make it worse.
I mean, this is Robert Kennedy Jr.'s quote that the line in the sand, this is the final battle.
Yeah.
They're a tiny evil group, highly organized, and they've certainly been able to get into every political nook and cranny, you know, and mm-hmm. control. But they are, I think, have overplayed their hand here.
Because I think there's probably people who probably do their bidding who now realize, hey, wait a second, what are they trying to pull here? I'm not going to go along with this. There's probably a lot of that going on.
Yeah, I mean, I think that there is skepticism that would be moving along the fraction of their control group that is not completely inside the guild. In other words, if you can imagine this organization having an inner evil core, family members, banking system, you know, this kind of group.
The Porch Brethren are going, wait a second.
Yeah, but outside that, they would have, you know, thought puppets that are closely held, you know, and that group, I think, has got to be experiencing some skepticism now. Because mm-hmm. the rationale that we need to do this to basically maintain, health or, I mean, whatever the rationale they give these people, I think now it's going to be clear to more and more people that this is just raw evil. It's just population reduction. It's just enslavement for the people that are left. And, even now, I think that some of the conspiracy theories about how they intend to, you know, basically de-brain, you know, with their vaccinations, you know, the population to create like a, the Brave New World with the Epsilon and Delta classes. I mean, even those things, I think, can start to be considered. I mean, at one time I was pretty much out in the world of, several years ago when I was bringing these ideas up. A lot of people just arched their eyebrows and they thought, oh, it's impossible. But I was saying, no, I don't think so. I think Huxley's book is not a warning. And I think it is a declaration of a plan. Mm-hmm. And showed that there was like hidden Freemason, you know, imagery in it, showing that he was part of the guild and he saw the future and this was our future. And when you see the Epsilon and Delta class and you see the state creating all of the children, right? I didn't think that was just some kind of fantasy he threw in for the fun of it. I thought it was a plan. And so now when you have the beast vaccine basically on the block with the with the luminous chip aspect to it, so they can keep our bio data like in a computer. At this point, it's like it's almost beyond Brave New World. Mm-hmm. So no, I don't think that these were fringe. I think that actually the analysis that produced them was based in fact, and I'm afraid that now this is going to be clear to everybody, even the thought puppets that are closely held by the oligarchs. But it's also hopeful that we can actually organize against it, because now it's clear, now it's out in the open, now it isn't something that's hidden.
Yeah, it's like what David Icke said, this cult had walked into the room and the door clicked behind it, and there they are before us, question is, what are we going to do with it now that it's there? It's they've shown shown their face, and I think he's spot on that, and that's the question. And I think because of that, millions more people have woken up to the reality, and it's just a question of mobilizing and them and being them able to mobilize, or at least motivate leaders to oppose it. And
Tim, one thing I was going to say, I wanted to make sure I mentioned this before, but I think it's an important point. Look, no depression and no fear.
No,
and that's a waste of time. And also, that is basically an intellectual construction that is unnatural. It has been, you're experiencing it because you've been conditioned in the wrong direction. You want to feel better, fight.
Yeah.
Fight. When you fight, what you're going to see is your senses will become keen, your depression will go away, and suddenly your energy will be flowing in the right direction, and you're going to feel terrific.
Mm-hmm.
See, that's how you want to wake up every day, is full of energy. And it's there. It is part of your birthright to, when you are attacked, to have energy to fight back with. I was talking to this guy who was talking about, well, you know, I've got this bug out place in Montana, you know, I'm going to live on squirrel meat. And I just said, that is the most cowardly and stupid thing. And you're running away from the greatest experience you could ever know as a human,
mm-hmm.
which is to defend yourself against evil. This is what you're not designed biologically, a big male like you that so strong to go and hide in a forest. That isn't for you. You're supposed to be here fighting. And if you do, you'll see your energy will increase. And you're the existential experience, to use a phrase, will be wonderful. You're going to feel terrific.
Yeah. When you're old, sitting in the fire, and your grandchild's sitting on your knee, and he asks you, what did you do during the great battle for humanity, the great COVID-19 pandemic scare? What did you do, granddaddy? You're not going to say, I ran off to Montana. I fought.
And I hid in a bunker.
Yeah.
The hell with that. That is stupid. It doesn't. First of all, it's completely self-defeating. The drones are going to find you anyway. There is no choice now.
Well, I mean, your neighbor out there, Elon Musk, did something interesting, didn't he?
He did, actually.
He's a weirdo, but I got to support him on this one.
Well, yeah, and the thing is, I don't know what to make, but I see him as a New World Order character. I mean, I think the cars are there to be self-driving and government, you know. I mean, I hate to say it because I own one, but and also, I mean, in your 70s, I also hate to say it, but man, you're kind of looking forward to like self-driving cars, because I notice I'm getting in a few like fender benders these days, you know, because my senses aren't quite what they should be. But anyway, the thing is, so he just told him to piss off. And what was great is he says, I'm going to open up, arrest me if you want.
Yeah.
Newsom walked back, mm-hmm. right? When confronted, they walked. Newsom said, well, I don't know. It's I'm not really the enforcement agency. The Board of Supervisors, they said, well, we don't really quite know what to do with this. It's the sheriff. And then the sheriff goes, what am I going to do? Well, that was it. Suddenly now, and Musk, to damn it, to his credit, put out 200 cars the first day. And I heard he's got up to 1,000 cars a day now. Yeah.
And every shopkeeper needs to take that example.
I mean, exactly right. Exactly right. In fact, I sent I sent out correspondence to our sheriff, who has not responded heroically, I'm ashamed to admit, but man, I am on his butt, and one of the supervisors that I can communicate with. And I said, look, just open Santa Barbara up and tell Newsom to piss off. Mm-hmm. And if he complains, say, well, arrest Musk, mm-hmm. because we can't keep our economies underwater while that guy is putting out 1,000 cars a day.
Yeah. Why is he allowed to operate? Not my store. Yeah.
And it just, this is the problem. We have multicultural supervisors and we don't have leaders. And again, this goes to,
That's how we've been weakened, which might be a topic for another day.
Now you can see how real politics are. You've got to get in there and fight. And this sheriff that we have has been very disappointing. And I'm going to really, whatever I can do to get this guy out of office, we got to do, because we need that office to hold firm. Because if the sheriff had come forward, had a press conference when the sheriff in Alameda County said that he wasn't going to arrest Musk, our guy should have come forward and said, you know what? We're open up. I'm not enforcing a darn thing. Mm-hmm. Because Musk can do it. I'm not going to ask our businesses to suffer either. So, you know, so the government did, the Governor Newsom didn't arrest Musk. The Alameda County suit didn't demand the sheriff to arrest Musk. The sheriff didn't arrest Musk. And you know what? I'm not going to arrest anybody. We're open. He should have, just like the Riverside sheriff.
Mm-hmm. They're not asking anything extraordinary. They're simply asking for you to exercise your right to go and earn a living so you can put food on the table for your family, keep a roof over their head.
Laws. You know. You're in defiance of an executive order, which is unconstitutional.
Yeah.
So the sheriff, is a coward, and it's embarrassing to be in the situation where so many cowards are in positions of power.
And again, California, a population of 40 million, 2,500 alleged deaths.
Yeah, 44 million. Yeah. This is like how many people fall out of the bathtub. Mm-hmm. So the state, you know, who are the dead? These are people that are all, the idea that COVID, if you take their reality, because I don't, but just say you do, it hasn't killed in and of itself, I don't think 200 people in the state of California.
No, because all these 200
people, right, are like, they're already on their way into, they're in death's door anyway. They're dying of pneumonia, things like this. So this is a group that's dying. Well, there isn't anything in the disease activity in California to justify even washing your hands.
Mm-hmm.
It's just stupid, let alone the idea of destroying our economy. So we're not dealing with the medical.
Again, how many people are going to die just because of the stress and the poverty that's brought out by economic shutdown?
Oh, God.
I mean, come on.
A 100 times worse. And I've been.
Suicide rates are already spiking. I mean.
Yeah. And believe me, that's just the tip of the iceberg, because the misery underneath that is enormous. It's enormous. Well, the misery that's underneath this.
Whatever diseases are out there, their morbidity and mortality rates are magnified tenfold by poverty.
Yep.
You know, public health, economics, that's one of these supposed public health authorities who don't understand or don't appear to understand the importance of economic activity. Like, well, wait a second. I mean, the economy is how we materially support ourselves. And you know, the better off we are materially, the healthier we are. That's the whole thing about infrastructure and sanitation and these things. Wealthier societies are healthier societies, for the most part, because of that. But they say, you know, you can grind the economy in the ground to save lives without any consideration of the collateral damage. And again, they're not that stupid. This is a cover, you know.
Exactly. You know. Look, one thing we have had a lot of in the United States up to this point have been freedom and hope.
Mm-hmm.
You may have been, you know, have distressed circumstances, but by God, you could hope for a better world, and also you were free to act on your hope.
Mm-hmm.
Now you don't have either. You think that isn't going to dramatically increase the psychological problems?
Well, think about the children growing up under this nonsense.
Exactly. Jeez. So Fauci's, his claim that, a little spike and, you know, you could end up with, like, you know, hurting the economic recovery. It's obviously just sophistry. He's just lying straight into the camera. He's not that stupid. Do you think he doesn't see any of this? Of course he does. Tim, what we're describing is the goal. Mm-hmm. This is what he is trying to achieve. The misery, the death, the suicide, the impoverishment. This is the goal. So, of course, you know, he's lying. And, of course, he's not going to admit that these things are obviously going to be far worse than anything that the weirdo virus can produce, because this is the hidden goal of the whole project.
And no one asks him a question like that.
Yeah.
Why is that? Well, that's another thing is I love how all these governors, all these staged press conferences, they're never, ever subjected to the public to be questioned for these things. Like, no normal average person can ask Governor of Michigan or Newsom any of these questions, or Cuomo of New York. no one can ask any of these questions. You know,
you can't even get to the mayor of Los Angeles. He's surrounded by like talking heads, you know, in press conferences.
What does it
like
tell you about these so-called elected public servants who have to be guarded by phalanx of armed guards everywhere they go?
Yeah, well, it tells you they're not actually of the people, doesn't it?
No, it doesn't.
And so there it is. You know, I think that I'm happy we were able to have this show because I think that, you know, some of the stuff we've talked about is useful. And we can actually, I think we can, everyone can kind of recognize the need to like start acting. I mean, I gave you some of my thoughts, man, I'm sure there are 100 better than anything I can come up with, but start thinking, start organizing, start actually getting out there and fighting. One thing I can tell you, Tim, if they start to fight, when anyone starts to fight back, they start to feel better. Mm-hmm. And so when you're, you know, when you're sitting there staring at, you know, Tony Fauci droning on about the need to stay locked down and you feel bad, and you should, that's because you're not fighting. You should be on the phone. You should be, you know, in the streets. You should be trying to use the internet appropriately to try to foment, new organizations, trying to link organizations, contact organizations that can possibly be, persuaded to come into this. We want to create as soon as we can, by the end of the year, if possible, because that's when Trump wants to bring the Marines in to help fight the virus.
I don't know. I mean, Donald Trump, he's like all over the place on this. I just like
he's hopeless. But I mean, I think he's just a.
Wait, today there was a press conference today where he wasn't wearing a mask, but Deborah Birx and Fauci were.
I'd like to have Fauci with just a shroud over his head. Anyway, so, you know, look. Let's start to act. We kind of had a deadline. Trump was talking about, if it goes real fast, we could have a vaccine by, you know, the end of the year. And I'm going to bring in the army to get it out quick. Thanks, Donald. That's a real favor for the citizens. So the citizens have to see this as real. And ain't conspiracy theory anymore, my friends. This is real. So we have to be prepared to show the government that, no, the inalienable rights of the Constitution are going to be held up. It's up to us. We have to do it ourselves. And believe me, you cannot trust that evil collection of individuals that are ruling the government and ruling the media to do anything. But, like the picture with Jacob Rothschild and Maria Abramovich in front of the painting, you know, Satan summons his legions. I mean, that's what we're up against. This is the apocalypse. So we're going to have to buckle down and fight hard. So, let's try to use this next week really efficiently. Come up with ideas as to how to start this organization. I put out a few I've had. Put comments, send emails to anyone you think who can help with the process and get going.
Yep. So, okay, Joe.
All right, Tim. Well, good luck, brother. I'll see you talk next week.
You get out, take a walk on the beach, shake a lot of hands, pump a lot of fists, rub elbows.
Yeah, and start to try to organize. Believe me, if you had seen me like on the beach, I am just. anyone who I think has an inkling of interest in any of this stuff, man, I am just all over them and encouraging, trying to, you know, like, here, let's get together.
Well, you got to exercise that immune system for the fall.
Hey, for the immune, right, exactly. Yeah. You got to get ready.
So, okay, Joe, take it easy.
All right, bro. Talk to you soon. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.